Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 88. We are here live tonight on DLive and also live on RadioAlbion.com. Now, we have video here on DLive, we have video on RadioAlbion.com, and we have audio only also on RadioAlbion.com. So if you have bandwidth problems, if DLive buffers for you, you can support the show over on Radio Albion, and you can just listen to it if there is problems with DLive. So that is very good. Now, Radio Albion is the home of Sven Longshanks. It is his website. It is his baby. He's a great, great nationalist. He does a lot for this movement. He does a lot for PA. And if you want more nationalist content, please go over and support RadioAlbion.com. Sven certainly deserves it. And two of my shows, I do lots of shows every week. Usually per week, I do about six or seven different shows, some regular, some irregular. And two regular shows I do are with Dr. David Duke and Dr. Patrick Slattery, and they can be found over on Radio Albion. Sven restreams them, so that's very good of him, and you can find other content that I produce over there as well. So please go and support him. He's a great guy. Now, if you don't manage to watch all the show, or if you've missed shows in the past, the best way to catch up on these shows is over on BitChute. Now, my full video collection is there, so please hop on over there and make sure you have my channel, or make sure you're subscribed to my channel. Now, I still am on YouTube by some miracle. I don't produce regular content there anymore, other than alternative streams, and that's for obvious reasons. So please support me on BitChute, because that is the permanent home of my new political videos. Now, if you'd like to contribute to this show, that would be massively, massively appreciated. We're going through some very tough times at the moment. Things are difficult for a lot of people, and if you do choose to financially contribute to this show, it means an awful lot to me. Now, I'm just popping the Entropy link in the chat now. The best way to contribute is Entropy. Entropy is a way you can send paid super chats or donations. All donations are very, very gratefully received, and any message attached to a donation will be read out live on air, as we do every week. There are also a system on Entropy of asking unpaid questions, and those unpaid questions get voted on. The best questions get asked every week, and we ask as many of those as we have time for. We prioritize the paid questions, but we do ask the unpaid questions as well. So that's the best way to contribute. The other good way to contribute is if you can send me cryptocurrency. You can write to me from my Bitcoin address, or you can find my Bitcoin address over on my BitChute account. Any cryptocurrency, again, very, very gratefully received. Thank you very much if you send that. And the other way to contribute to me is write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, this past few weeks, I've been getting a lot of emails from people who are suffering from depression, who are trapped in their home during this lockdown, who feel very isolated. I do my best to answer every email, unless it's War and Peace and it takes me a couple of days to get around to it. But I'm getting a lot of people writing to me at the moment, contacting me and even calling me because they are depressed. Now, if you are going through hard times, do reach out to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you need to speak to somebody, or if you're in a really, really dark place and you're contemplating things that you shouldn't be, I will give you my phone number and we can have a chat. So please make sure that you don't go through these tough times alone. We do have a support network. That's what Patriotic Alternative is for. So that's the way you can contribute to the show or get in touch. Also, if you can share the show on Twitter, that would be really, really helpful. I can't share it on Twitter because they banned me and they hate me and they didn't even give me a chance to appeal. So I'm not too fond of them either. But if you could pump out the link there to help me out, that would be superb. Now, on Sunday night, myself, Laura, Nativist Concern, and Horace will be doing the first of the PA Film Club. We will be doing a review of The Godfather. That will be at 8 p.m. UK time. It will last for 2 hours. There will be questions and answers. There will be a chance to ask questions to the panel. So if you are interested in taking part in the film club, please make sure you have watched The Godfather recently. There's plenty of time to watch it. It's a 3-hour film. It's an absolute masterpiece. Make sure you watch it. Fantastic. It's going to be a good show. And that's part of our rollout of new activities, which is film club, book club, and gaming night. We're doing plenty of things to try and get people participating, talking about things, into activities. And we do intend to set up a PA chat room to discuss the movie as well. So it's all community building stuff. Now, my Friday video will be about Ashley Babbitt. Obviously, it won't be on YouTube. So that'll be on BitChute. So make sure you look forward to that. That will be out at the usual time, 1 p.m. on Friday. I've already recorded the audio for that today. It'll be edited tomorrow, and that will be a BitChute exclusive. So please support me over there. And that is the intro. Sorry, it's a bit longer than I like it to be, but there was a few announcements. Now, we have our returning Jason. Jason, we missed you last week. You were in the thick of it. You were in Washington. You were there when it all happened, when, according to our enemies, democracy died in America. It's good to see you back. It's good to see that you're safe and that you made it out in one piece. How did it go? How are you? Who's on tap? And have the FBI raided your home yet?
Well, they have. They haven't come to my home yet. I guess I'll keep my eyes open. Anything's possible. But there's a bit much to tell. Maybe we can talk about bits and pieces of what took place in Washington, D.C. over the course of the show and maybe coming shows. Actually, I've got one of my machines down right now, and maybe we'll have Clarion on tap. Everybody loves Clarion, so she would be a fantastic guest this coming week. But let's go ahead and dig into it today with Richard and get into the show.
Well, we do have a very, very special and very, very talented guest, and it is his first time on PWR. It is Richard the Lionheart. Now, we usually have a lot of online people on this show. When I say online people, they are people who are mainly famous for online content, for things they have done on the internet, whether it's hosting websites, whether it's producing content on YouTube, whether they are prolific tweeters, whether they are people who are part of online organizations or run networks that help spread and disseminate real news. That's what people are usually on this show for. And that makes this guy very, very special. He stands out from the crowd because although he has a YouTube channel, he is a man of action. He's a man of the real world. He's an outdoorsman. He helps a lot of young people get into an outdoorsy lifestyle. He does lots of wild camping. He teaches fitness. He teaches self-defense. He's also a talented musician. This guy is a man of many talents. And on top of that, he does have a YouTube channel. Now, it is a small YouTube channel, so I'm hoping that people can spam the link to his channel in the chat tonight and we can help build it for him because he certainly deserves it. And at a time like this, when we are living under this incredible global tyranny, for a man like this to still be out there camping, doing things in the real world and helping people who need to get out there, who need to be out there in the wilderness, out in the wild, doing productive, healthy activities. Take your hat off for Richard the Lionheart. What a great guy. Please, my friend, introduce yourself. Tell us all about you. Tell us about your work, about your interests. Fill in any gaps that I've left. And tell us how we can contribute to your incredible work.
Well, thank you for that extensive and very, it was a really nice introduction. I appreciate that. And I guess I never really saw myself ending up in this position. My life has just kind of ended up this way, and here I'm sat. I've always been interested in the outdoors and martial arts, and I'm a former serviceman and stuff like that. And when I first discovered nationalism as a movement, I just kind of woke up from what felt like a bit of a daze, a bit of a sleep, and just really decided at that moment in my life that I was prepared to move forward with an open mind, and there must be lots of other men out there feeling the same way as me. And I also have yourself to thank for that, because I discovered your videos on YouTube and Laura Towler and discovered Patriotic Alternative. And that gave me the confidence to at least know that the ideas and my thoughts and feelings that I had at the time, politically, socially, morally, etc., were acceptable ones, and other people have those same feelings as well. And I'm sure you probably get the same thing, but when I started my channel, I just had a myriad of young men, mostly, getting in touch with me, telling me that they felt the same way and they felt a bit disenfranchised. And so my immediate thought was, well, I'm very much into fitness. I love running, and I train with TRX, obviously, because the gyms are shut and all that kind of stuff. I love to do these home workouts, and combat workouts and things like that. And I also love the outdoors, and I love camping, navigating, foraging, that kind of thing. So I really wanted to find a way that I could bring that all together. So I started my channel, and I kind of, because I come from a bit of a musical background as well, thought I could sort of bring that into it a little bit, have people kind of come onto the show for a chill out on a Sunday or whatever it may be, and we can chat a bit of politics, play a bit of music, like traditional English music and stuff like that, and talk a little bit about survivalism and, you know, how to improve on your fitness, how to motivate yourself, talk a little bit about discipline and things like that. And it kind of just grew from there, but I felt really bad to see all these quite extensive emails from young guys that were just feeling despair, I think is the best word for it. I wanted to create a group and a bit of a outdoors, in real life movement where we could kind of get together and at least have each other and have something to work towards. And that's exactly where the Wild Campers comes from.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And I've been getting a bit of criticism recently, and people have got a very, very short memory, because now we're having to do alternative forms of community building. We've been doing the Warzone tournaments, we're doing the book club, we're doing the film club, and it's because our big events have been closed down. We haven't been able to do the camps. But people who are using this as a sort of a stick to beat me with may have forgotten that the first PA events were all actual outdoor events. And we used to do the 10, 12 mile hikes in the Derbyshire Dales. We used to do the lunacy runs, and they were the hardcore 10K assault courses set in a valley where you are literally running through a river and climbing over obstacles, going under nets, going through fields, swimming under bridges. You have to, at one point, you have to hold your breath and swim under a very, very low-lying bridge. And if one, that doesn't sound too bad, or it might sound bad to some people, but when you do that and you've been running and you're gasping for breath, then doing a dive under a bridge in ice cold water is very, very difficult. And listening to you talk now, this was largely one of the things that drove me to set up PA, to get young men and young women out there in the people of all ages out there in the wilderness, out there in the wild, doing physical activities, bonding. And the first events were the lunacy runs. They were the camps in the Midlands. And then we had the Christmas meetups. The conferences came much later. And I personally find it really, really galling that for the last couple of years, we haven't been able to do those lunacy runs. We're not able to do these big events, and the fitness has been something that's gone on the back burner thanks to this tyrannical government. And the fact you're still doing that's amazing. And I'll tell you one thing, mate, when this lockdown ends, if it ever ends and we ever get to do a lunacy run again, I really hope you will join me, because you look like a fit young lad, and I hope you come represent PA and we finally get a PA guy who wins that run. What do you say? Are you going to join me?
Oh yeah, 100%. I'll be there. I'll set the benchmark. I will set the standard, and then it'll be up for everybody else to try and beat me. I'm very competitive. I love things like that. That's what I'm all about. Sounds like a really good idea. I can't wait.
Well, being 40 now, I think my best time was, I think I came 11th or 12th was my best ever lunacy run out of about 300 people. So I used to be very, very good, but I am slowing up a bit now. And it's time I handed over the mantle to a younger and better man. And to be fair, since PA started doing the lunacy runs, there have been people who have turned up and beaten me. So you've got a military background, and you are really, really into fitness, but you're also into music. And for a lot of people, they'll be thinking, this guy, he's got so many things going for him, and they're very different things, because to be involved in fitness and to be such a hands-on, sort of masculine, outdoorsy guy doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with music. So tell us a bit about your musical talents too.
Well, it basically just came about because I used to play in school as a drummer. My grandfather was a drummer. He served in the Second World War as a communicator and was in the marching band. And he was also a boxer. So when I was a kid, I drew a lot of inspiration from my grandfather. And I also wanted to do boxing, and I wanted to play the drums. And he used to bring me Buddy Rich videos round as well, which is like a jazz drummer. I'm sure some of the audience would be familiar with his work. And he plays in a big band and stuff. And I've always been interested in music. Basically, I played drums. I got to a grade 8 level drum. I was playing for like Hampshire Youth Jazz Orchestra and doing all sorts of really great stuff with jazz and stuff. I wasn't really that interested in jazz, I just loved playing music. And then I got older, I joined the forces. And then when I left, I wanted to play drums again, and I lived at the time in Gosport, which is a pretty run down area where I lived, and it was pretty rough. And you couldn't really play the drums. I took a drum kit there, and I think it was in the first week or so, one of the neighbours knocked on the door and threatened to stab me if I played it ever again. So I immediately stopped, and I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I've always wanted to play guitar, so I think I'll do that. So I picked up a guitar, and you know, you can put headphones on and learn a bit of guitar, and I started writing music. And my friend who ran a pub said, look, I'll give you £150 if you come to my pub on Friday and just play for an hour. So I did, and I thought, £150, if I get three or four of these a week, I can make a decent living. And that just kind of morphed into other stuff. I ended up winning a few awards. I still have some stuff out now, like songwriting stuff that I managed to chart. I get sort of royalties and bits and bobs from that as well. So it's quite something that's always been part of my life, but it's not really my main focus at the moment. It's just something I guess I bring to the table a little on the odd occasion when I'm streaming, because I think there's some people out there that appreciate a bit of music, and I just don't think we have enough musicians on our side. We have some really good ones out there, the Jody Kays, the Will Stanleys, there's quite a few out there to choose from. Urba Derba is another one of my favourites. But yeah, I'd like to just give that message to other musicians, because I know what it's like to work in those musical circles. You're basically surrounded by the far left all the time. And so to even oppose things like feminism is a very dangerous move, and you could get ostracised and you get targeted and kicked out, and that's eventually what happened to me. And then I ended up finding the Groypers and finding yourself and Patriotic Alternative, and the rest is history, really. But yeah, music, especially at a time like this, is really useful for people that are struggling, feeling very negative about the way that the world is going at the moment. And certainly learning opens up your brain to work in different ways. I think it affects your brain function in a positive way. So if anyone does have access to an instrument that's been collecting dust in the corner, perhaps now's the time to pick it up and give it a go.
Well, I've never been remotely musical. I think the extent of my musical career, if you can call it that, was failing to play the recorder at school. So you will never, you will never, ever hear me do anything musical. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't do music. My brain's just not wired that way. But I think it would be fantastic in the future, when we do go out and do PA camps, if we do wild camping, if we get back to Lunacy Run. I mean, Lunacy Run is very contingent on these, the government allowing events like that to go ahead, because it's a large sporting event, and the guy that runs it could be fined up to £10,000 for holding it. I know he wants to hold it. He's a fantastic guy. He's a guy that I admire very, very much. But unfortunately, he can't afford a £10,000 fine for holding it. But if we do hold those kind of events again, it would be fantastic to have you along and maybe do a little bit of an acoustic set for us, if you would. That would be fantastic. But so far, it's been quite a light-hearted and interesting show tonight, and definitely a different vibe with Richard here. But we do have to talk about some of the things that are going on, and I'm very much looking forward to Richard's take, because since we have seen what went on in America the other Wednesday when Jason wasn't on the show, last Wednesday when Jason wasn't on the show, things have changed dramatically, not just in America, but all over the world. And the thing that we've seen the most is a massive, massive deplatforming of anybody right of Karl Marx, basically. If you're right of Karl Marx, you've been going, you're going down the memory hole. Now, just the other day, I heard that Twitter had canned 70,000 leading conservative accounts or conservative patriotic nationalist accounts since the beginning of the week. So that was Tuesday. So in 2 days, that's 35,000 accounts a day, and they were leading conservative accounts, major ones, including people connected to the president, including campaigners, right-wing journalists, anybody that isn't singing to their hymn sheet, disappeared down the memory hole in the last 2-3 days. Now, I was already gone. Lots of people were already gone. And I'm sure there'll be many, many more go. And we've always heard from these people the following mantra. It's a private business. If you don't like it, set up your own social network. So some people did. And they set up Gab. They set up Parler. Now, Parler was run by some pretty powerful Republicans, people who were attached to the Republican Party, people who were quite wealthy, and they were quite sure that what they were doing was protected under the First Amendment. And because of that, and because of their links to people who were powerful Republicans, they could set up their own social network like they were being told to do. And that social network would not only survive, but it would flourish. It would attract many people. It would attract sitting politicians, media pundits, and a whole range of people from across the spectrum that is right-wing politics. And it is a spectrum. There are plenty of different positions within what could be described as right-wing politics. And Parler is now gone. So this is what happens because they put their faith in Amazon. They put their faith in Google. They put their faith in Apple, and they're now gone. They've been squished out. Gab is doing fantastically, but it is under such heavy load at the moment. Most of the times I've tried to log in today to check my posts or to post new things, it's been like a battle refreshing my browser again and again. Now, this isn't a knock at Andrew Tauber. It's not a knock at Gab. They're doing amazing work. I support them. I think they're just struggling to cope with the massive, massive influx of new members. But unfortunately, it doesn't have an app. It wasn't on the App Store for very long. And Gab is really, really suffering. I think it's a great site. I think its functionality most of the time is wonderful. I really, really enjoyed using it. I used to be a Gab Pro supporter. I need to renew that because they certainly deserve my support and they deserve money from us all because they're doing a wonderful service. But they're under such heavy load, it barely comes up. We've already seen the first accounts being banned from Telegram. DLive, which is an alternative where we're streaming tonight, this stream could get cut midstream. I might not be on DLive next week because they've already banned Owen Benjamin and Nick Fuentes, which is a really bold move because they were their biggest stars. More money flowed through to DLive from Owen Benjamin and Nick Fuentes than Owen Vince also from the Red Elephants. Well, those three channels probably brought in more money together than almost the whole of the site, the whole of the rest of the site put together. So those three were massive, massive. And DLive has been taking down these huge accounts. They've been bending a knee. Unfortunately, there's no streaming services on BitChute yet. That's something I'd like to see change. But these are very tough times. These are worrying times. We are being completely squeezed out. We are seeing a massive loss of freedom of speech. The internet is no longer the Wild West anymore. It's no longer an open playing field. It is completely locked down. And all of the biggest social media and information sites are now closed off to the vast majority of us. And my final take on this before I pass it over to Richard and before I pass it to Jason for their thoughts on this is when they banned President Donald Trump, I sat back and I thought that's the death knell for free speech. Because if they can delete a sitting US president, and remember, when I grew up, it was always the US president was the leader of the free world. He was the most powerful man in the world. He was basically the world leader. And that to the point where it was assumed that if aliens came to Earth, the one person they would want to speak to would be the president. He was the man, the guy in charge, effectively the most powerful man on the planet. But the most powerful man on the planet has just been banned by Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And apparently it's got so petty today, I've heard that Baron Trump, this may be true, it may not be true, but I've heard that Baron Trump has had his Minecraft account deleted because of his connection to the Trump family. If that is true, that is absolutely insane. But we are moving into a period of history where all speech is directly controlled and any alternative is brutally squashed by these supposedly neutral big tech companies that aren't neutral at all. So, Richard, what's your take on this? Obviously, it's been a week now since the events that unfolded in Washington, and we have seen the after effects. It's been like a seismic ripple across the internet. How do you feel about this, and what do you think is the way forward for people like us?
Well, I think to look at it from a positive point of view, nationalists will always find a way to communicate with one another. I haven't been in this movement for very long, but what I do know about a lot of the nationalists that I know is they're very resilient people, and they're also very creative and pragmatic. And the stoicism that exists within a lot of the men that I know in nationalist circles is very strong. So it doesn't matter too much, I think, about what direction we're pushed. We will always remain in a position where we'll come together in the end. I think it's a terrible thing, and what's outstanding to me is the sheer hypocrisy of some of these people that are calling for these channels to be taken down. It's really quite staggering. I just want to live in a world where people are free to say the things that they would like to say. I just don't think it's healthy for any society to exist in a place where certain voices are put to the forefront and other voices are sort of locked in the basement, so to speak. This doesn't create a healthy platform for debate, it's very, very manipulative and quite scary as well. So I think a lot of people watching in on this that's happening at the moment are probably feeling quite, you know, maybe even depressed about it. You have the lockdowns, the feeling that you can't speak freely, the fact that you're healthy and you're being quarantined, your government's dictating who you can and can't see, and things like Christmas, you know, you must be feeling really backed into a corner. And I think that those behaviours from any kind of power that exists within society to afflict that kind of oppression and tyranny on free people is just a terrible, terrible thing. And I try to sort of manage my mindset. I try to just be very, you know, be careful about how much I'm engaging with this stuff and how much I let it get to me. I say I'll always try and look at the positive aspect of it. And if anything, it just makes me a lot more driven towards these real life events, because you really can't beat that. But I mean, I'd be lying to you if I said I hadn't even looked at things like ham radio and things like that, because I honestly think we might be at that stage where we're going to be breaker come in, you know, sort of thing. Because let's face it, these people have the monopoly, and if they have the power to give you everything you want, they also have the power to take everything you have, and that's something we need to be very wary of.
That's very, very well put. And when we started PA, the reason we started it, or one of the reasons, was I kept saying, this is going to happen. I was basically saying this was going to happen a long, long time ago. And I was telling people that if we didn't start organizing in the real world, at worst, we would be completely wiped out from the internet. And at best, we would be corralled into much, much smaller sites, which were effectively echo chambers where we weren't reaching the public. And we needed to find a way where we could stay in touch, where we could build real world connections, and where we could actually reach out to the public, whether that be through protesting, through leaflets, through banner drops, through community outreach events like our excellent Help the Homeless campaign that has been spearheaded by Sam and Laura in Yorkshire. These are the kind of things we need to be doing. But I've been really looking forward to speaking to Jason, because it was the first show he's missed ever the other week. And obviously he was in Washington. He was on the front line. Some people had some conspiracy theories last week that I'd secretly bumped you off and you weren't coming back. I said you're in Washington, but people wouldn't listen. Jason, how was it on the ground? Tell us a little bit about it. Then obviously comment as best you can on this social media censorship and the seismic ripples left in the, you know, the aftershock of this event.
Well, thank you, brother. And I'll truncate as best I can so we can give as much time to Richard today as our guest. First thing I want to say, though, for everybody, there is a great deal of depression right now. I mentioned that we're definitely going to see suicides, and the regime, anti-white regime media, news and entertainment media, aren't going to say a thing about it. There are going to be prosecutions, persecution, and if it's reported at all, the anti-white news and entertainment will tell us that it is justified because these people, and then we will speak in our story, are not anti-white enough. They will use different words, but I don't care what they use. To segue from that, we need to appreciate the reality that anti-whites can take everything from us, even those ham radios. They can jam that those frequencies and prevent them from being used. But the one thing they can't take from us is our story. And we decide what story we're going to be in. Are we going to be in their anti-white narrative where we are the villain and where there's a sanguinary end to our people at the final pages of that story? Or are we going to be in our own story where we are the heroes and where we reclaim our destiny irrespective of what the anti-whites do? That's the one thing. No matter how oppressive the tyranny, even Soviet Union, even in China, it's the one thing they can't take from you. And it's the most important thing because it's your story that will either set you in chains or set you free. It takes an act of the will to resist the story imposed upon you by a regime, and certainly as monolithic and ubiquitous as the anti-white regime is able to be, with all of the control of all of the tech that the Western mind has created, they can reach into every facet of our lives. It may well mean that you have to get away from all of this, all of the music, all of the television, all of the music, TV, movies, all of the video games, in order to live in our own story. Now, when I was out there with Dr. Patrick Slattery in DC, as you all will remember, the great Dr. Patrick Slattery. By the way, we've never met in person, but by being dear friends online, meeting him, as I am wont to say, it was meeting an old friend for the first time. I knew exactly who he was. And actually, I saw him at a great distance. We were on the phone and I said, do a couple of 360s. And he did it. So I was able to say, yep, that's you, doctor. And I went right down the, we were in the subway system, and I walked right down the platform to him, and we clasped hands and we headed out into what was the most historic day, one of the most historic days in all of American and therefore world history, because this is indeed the superpower of the world economically, militarily, and everything that it, and culturally, everything that it does. And of course, that culture is not the culture of the Westman. It's the culture of very different people. Everything that it does, every direction that it goes, is going to reverberate around the totality of the Western world. And what I say about January is that January 6, 21 was the death of innocence for the American patriot, because they had believed for in totality of their lives that America was the country that their founding fathers had created, that it was the continuation of that country, that it was their people, that it was their country, that it represented them, the government. And they learned on that day, January 6, 21, that it indeed is not their country. It is not the country of the American patriot, that the people who squat inside the whorehouse known as the Capitol are the enemies of the people. And they intend to inflict grievous harm on us, on Western kind, the founding stock of this country, for the benefit of anti-whites who are white and anti-white alike. So it was an absolutely epic day. It was glorious in its, the sort of vicissitudes. There was this great elation. There was a great sense of history being written, the pages of history being written. And you were in the midst of those words being laid to paper. The president spoke, and he said, and by the way, there was 500,000 or more people in Washington, D.C. Patrick and I could not believe people just kept coming and streaming in from all different directions. Flags, stars and stripes, Confederate flags, flags of my heritage, which, by the way, with the spending bill that Donald Trump vetoed and Congress overruled him, the same Congress right now, who is impeaching him at this very moment. And by the way, for those who don't know, you can impeach a president once they're out of office. Once they're done with the impeachment, it will go to trial in the Senate, and he will be prevented from ever running for office again. That is something they have the power to do. But while we were in the midst of all of this, you know, Donald Trump saying he was going to go with us, walk with us to the Capitol building. And that was momentous because he said, we're going to go down Constitution Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. And we're going to go let the House, we're going to go let these legislators know that they are not going to steal the election from us, that they are going to investigate all of the election irregularities, which I will tell you all were prevented from being heard in every single one of these states by procedural reasons. The evidence wasn't examined. They didn't go through all of the claims, all of the witness testimony that had gone down on oath, punishable by fines and imprisonment. It was all procedural. They weren't going to have a look at it. The same people, by the way, who investigated Donald Trump for 4 years for Russia collusion and revealed to all of us, if you all are unaware, that there wasn't a shred of evidence of collusion, not a single thing that they could say, this is the reason why we had to investigate. They investigated for 4 years over nothing but baseless claims, and yet they didn't have a stomach for revealing not only the double standard, but who really controls the country. And that, circling back to what Mark said, the belief that the president of the United States is in charge of the United States, the belief indeed that his power is so great that if aliens came to the world, they would want to talk with the president of the United States, is revealed for the farce that it is. Those who hold the loans, those who hold the money behind the news and entertainment industries and obviously the banking and the big tech, those are the ones who are actually in charge of the United States and therefore the Western world. And they are demonstrating that very clearly for all of us. Now, what happened, and I'll close with this so we can get right back to hearing from Richard and continuing with the questions of the show today, is that there was a great elation, a great patriotism that was present on that day. It was a glorious day. Nobody should ever refer to this as a riot. Nobody should ever refer to this as an insurrection. Nobody should ever refer to this as anything criminal. It was a Patriots Day. It was a red, white, and blue day for the United States. The Patriots of America showed up at what they thought was their house, now a whorehouse for the anti-whites, been that way a long time, and shouted USA at the house, the capital of the United States, supposedly the house of the people. And when they were finally able to get inside, by the way, the police absolutely brutalized the patriots who had shown up. Why? Because in Western civilization, the white life doesn't have any value whatsoever. Non-white lives have infinite value in Western civilization, so much so that the police will kneel. They will open their mouths when they kneel. They will beg for forgiveness. They will be deferential. They will let them destroy. And it's white people who stand with them as anti-whites will be allowed to destroy, will set fire, and they'll, and the politicians will say claim insurance will take care of it. This is what happens. Why is a civil disobedience? Where does it say they have to be quiet and be good and these sorts of things? And when indeed patriots show up at what they believe and what is supposed to be their house, the Capitol, which, by the way, as Dr. Patrick Slattery pointed out, in these momentous moments, right in the midst of the flash bang grenades that we hustled over and videotaped, the tear gas grenades, the rubber bullets shot through people's faces that we got photographs of, the blood all over the place, the people beaten over the heads, for what? For showing up at what they believed was their house to shout their disapproval at legislators who refused to look at the evidence. These people finally get inside, and if this was an actual riot, if they actually wanted to insurrect, that damn whorehouse would have been burnt to the ground. There were hundreds of people inside the Capitol building. They would have found lighters if they didn't bring them of their own accord. And of course, if they had wanted to do damage like that, they would have brought such material with them. Breaking a few windows and somebody picking up a lectern and somebody taking some stationery with them and somebody taking a computer. Yes, those who thieved anything for, you know, who purloined should be prosecuted for theft. But taking a couple things out of the Capitol building is not insurrection. Breaking a couple windows that'll be replaced by insurance is not insurrection. They could have burned that place to the ground. They could have set hundreds of fires inside the Capitol building that no one would have been able to get to. In just the 1980s, a Rosenberg snuck a bomb into the Capitol building and set it off. And she got 86 years or something like this in jail and spent only a handful, and now she runs Black Lives Matter. So that is actual insurrection. These are anti-white whore bastards that occupy the House of the People in the United States of America. This was the Patriots' Day, January 6, 21. We should remember it for all time. When the innocents for the Patriot died. That's what died, not America. It was the death of innocents in the United States. And that, my friends, is what Patrick Slattery and I witnessed firsthand. And thank God he was with me. He has been to so many of these. He knew exactly where to go, where to be. And it was his voice that echoed over the Capitol grounds when he held that little radio. And this is the last thing I'll say. I'll pass it back. When he held that little radio that was playing C-SPAN, and the voice of that traitor coming through that little speaker on that little handheld radio of the traitor Pence, who said twice, there'll be no debate on the House floor when a representative from Virginia simply asked, how do I object when the rules of COVID are going to prevent me from being on the House floor? COVID's something we're going to talk about today. And on the second time, when the traitor Pence said there'll be no debate to a question that somebody was asking, Dr. Patrick Slattery said to all of these people who were crowding around at this city corner to hear the words coming out of his mouth and the words coming out of that little speaker on that radio, police surrounding us and pulling in vans of these shock troops dressed in this shock troop gear to assault the patriots of America. He said, it's over. They're throwing it. And everyone knew at that moment, that is when everything changed. It reverberated across the lawn, around the totality of the Capitol, people watching on their cell phones, listening on their radios to what had just happened. That was the moment when the innocence of the patriot in America died. And now everything moving forward, my friends, is going to be very different.
Thank you for those powerful words. And yes, Susan Rosenberg, she was involved in the bombing of the Capitol building in 1983. She was eventually captured a year later. She had over 700 pounds of plastic explosives, firearms, and thousands of fake IDs in her possession. She had also been involved in other terrorist attacks and involved in the murder of a couple of security guards during an armored car robbery. She was sentenced to 52 years in prison, and Bill Clinton commuted her sentence on the last day of his term as president. And she is now free and works for a group called the Thousand Currents, which is a fundraising arm of Black Lives Matter. She is very well paid. She goes around speaking at colleges and universities. This is an actual terrorist, and the Democrats love her. And that is very important to remember. Now, you touched heavily there on COVID. You mentioned it several times. And this is something I want to speak to Richard about, because today the COVID narrative went nuclear. For a long time, we've been talking about curfews, we've been talking about health passports, and we've been talking about the government and the big corporations clamping down on people. Well, they have now admitted that there will be health passports. They are trialing health passports. They have admitted that there will be curfews. There will be much, much, much harsher restrictions on us. And they have also, well, when I say they, this is HSBC, have said that people who break COVID legislations will have their banking services withdrawn. So if you're caught breaking COVID legislations, HSBC will close your account. Now, this might all sound a little bit crazy, but as it does sound crazy, I want to share something with you today, because we've heard and seen numerous stories in the press of the police dealing very, very harshly with people just out doing their normal daily business. We've heard about people doing, I'm just trying to bring up the actual articles so you can see them, so you can see them for yourself, because we've heard plenty of stories or plenty of stories have been reported in the press about people being dealt with in a very, very harsh manner by the police. And I want to show you one of these stories before I pass it over to Richard. This one, COVID, women on exercise trip surrounded by police. Now, these two women were walking out on a very cold day, just doing a bit of exercise. They both had a coffee each. They were surrounded by police. They were given fines and they were treated very, very badly by police. And you'd think that they'd committed some horrific or very, very serious offence, and all they'd done is gone for a walk. Now, yesterday in Wales, this happened. Over 300 people, Black Lives Matter supporters, marched through Cardiff yesterday. There were no arrests. The police didn't corral these people. The media, politicians, they're not attacking them. There will be no fines. And these people are allowed to get away with it. And it tells you everything you need to know. This is a scamdemic. It is not real. If this was some real pandemic and we were all at risk, these people would have to be arrested. They would be arrested or they'd all be dying because they were gathering together in such large numbers. They are neither dying nor are they being arrested. These rules are being selectively applied to crack down on normal people, overwhelmingly white people. This is an anti-white agenda. Now, I did a COVID special here on D Live last Friday, and I said the COVID agenda is intrinsically linked and interwoven with the anti-white agenda. And I think what I've shown you here proves that beyond a shadow of doubt. Two women surrounded by police as if they were hardened criminals, while 300 BLM supporters march through Cardiff and the police do not do a thing. And the organizer of that protest, he won't be arrested. He won't be fined. Richard, what are your thoughts? Where is this going? How is this going to affect us all? And what is the end game, my friend?
Well, it's been something that I'd never thought would happen in my lifetime. And every day you wake up and something else takes place and you think, this just cannot be the reality that I've been born into. This cannot be my reality. And of those videos that you've just mentioned, the most shocking thing that I find is the bystanders, the people that are stood there watching their fellow countrymen and women be arrested by police. There's nothing stopping you. Like, let me say this. If I witness somebody being wrongfully arrested for just practicing their human rights, which are inalienable, and the police used force, I would use reasonable force to resist those police from doing that. And I think everybody should start standing up for each other at this point in time. Because next time a police officer thinks, oh, I'm going to get a couple of ticks in the boxes today, I'm going to go arrest a couple of these. There was a woman sat on the seafront down the south of England having a coffee with her dad, and the police stormed over there like, it was absolutely unbelievable, sort of frog marching them to the cars. And there's lots of people just stood around watching, and I thought, how could you do that? How have we got to this stage as a society now? Where you're literally watching, that could be you. That could be you tomorrow, for all you know. She had a coffee, she's chatting with her dad. He's an elderly guy. Life is precious. And, you know, I always talk about, when I'm talking about COVID, I talk about when I was very young, I watched a film called The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. And this is what this COVID thing feels like to me. You have this boy whose mum lies to him about him having this immune disorder and locks him in his bedroom. And this woman moves next door, this young girl, and they develop a friendship. And eventually she grows up and she goes off to college. And he doesn't like that. He decides, I'm actually going to leave this bubble and spend one day with her because I know I'm going to die. One day of freedom to be with the person that I love, because it's not worth living your life in a prison. And that is exactly what our governments combined at the moment are trying to do to us. They're saying, this is for your benefit. This is for your benefit. If you think that the government is doing this for your benefit, then I cannot help you. I cannot help you at this stage. You have to be able to be competent enough to assess your own risk. At the start of this pandemic, they told us we'd be piling up bodies in ice rinks. Yeah, they told us we were going to lose loved ones. Well, they were right about that, but it wasn't from COVID. It was from all the infighting. You should be wearing a mask. You're killing people by not wearing a mask, a piece of cloth across your face. This is getting ridiculous, and it's all about creating a fractured society because it's much easier to manipulate a fractured society. And the most devastating factor of this whole COVID-19 scandemic is the lack of pushback from the general public across the West. And it scares the life out of me. But one thing that makes me feel positive is that there are a bunch of competent men and women who know that this is a scam. And they are now beginning to push back and collectivise. And it's about time that we started to do that. And I always tell myself that in all of these books and novels and things that inspire us, poems and things like that, there's always a hero. But you cannot have heroes unless you have villains. And right now, this COVID-19 is creating a lot of villains. And now it's time for those heroes to step up and do something which is going to change the course of our future from here onwards. And yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Very well said and very powerful words. I often use the terms isolated. I often use the term atomized. I talk about being isolated and atomized and broken apart as a community. And you can see what's happening here. And I always say all of these other groups, all of these other movements, all of these other ethnic groups, all these racial groups are allowed to organize. They're allowed to do as they please. They're allowed to have in-group preference. It's us, white people, people of European descent that aren't. And here you see that again. We are not allowed to protest. We're not allowed to take to the streets. We're not allowed to march. But if Black Lives Matter want to march, they can. And that means they're first class citizens and we are second class citizens. Jason, what are your thoughts on this? And feel free to comment on any of this, any of these news articles from here in the UK, because I think when you see stuff like this, is it like that in America? Is it as bad with the COVID lockdowns over there?
Well, it is in some places every bit as bad. And in some places, some of the states, they're talking about some of the same regulations and floating the idea of COVID passports. And I think it might be in, of course, California, where they are, well, and even in Georgia, I think they're handing out little badges to those who get the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine. And it's sort of like a potentially a way to mentally prepare people for passports, to be able to travel, to be able to have some of your freedoms back. Regrettably, since we are going to have a President Joe Biden, I'm sure they are going to be attempting to force some of the most extreme anti-white measures that we see in states like New York and California on the rest of the country. That's going to be, of course, very problematic for them, because these sorts of extreme anti-white measures are very expensive. And what they end up doing here in the United States is fleecing the states that aren't as anti-white, or at least physically as anti-white, to pay for the states who waste the taxpayer dollars on anti-white programs and the like, and end up running taxpayers out of the states or out of the counties or cities where they are. The big thing that I think is revealed here, and Richard did a brilliant job, and Mark, you did a brilliant job demonstrating the double standard, which reveals that there is a very particular set of people who are in charge of the system. They give license to their henchmen. There has never been more evidence now. Right, you have side by side, juxtapositioned, the treatment of all year long, all 2020 and now into 2021, of the people in the streets who are anti-white, destroying Western civilization, given carte blanche, treated deferentially. And then you have, when patriots go out, whether it's patriots in the US or patriots in the UK, we all remember when those same Bobby punk bitches who couldn't get on their knees quick enough for the anti-whites suddenly came out in riot gear And we're telling veterans in the UK that they were going to, you have to be led to a certain area, and then oops, you're in the area we led you to, and now this is some sort of high crime for coming into this area, and you all are facing serious lifetime type of imprisonment, to the point where veterans of war from the UK were crying on their YouTube videos, literally crying at the death of their country, that they could not believe that they could be so betrayed. And now they're going to come forward, folks, with, and I have spoken with an individual, actually now a couple, epidemiologists and trained in virology as well, the mRNA vaccine. The question that I asked here on this show, I've asked elsewhere as well at the very beginning, and then I'll pass it back, is this, is that when you receive a vaccine that is a brand new type of vaccine that has not been experimented on with in the population in general until now, when you use this vaccine that is supposed to get into the cell so that the cell begins producing the protein of COVID-19, what then happens if that vaccine gets into the nucleus and the cell undergoes mitosis for the rest of your life? The cell, your cells then are producing an alien protein in your body for the rest of your life that your immunity will attack. Now, what does that end up in my layman's position? I thought, well, eventually you would get to the point where the immune system would be so overtaxed by killing of these proteins in the body that you would die from other things. You wouldn't be able to protect yourself from something very common like the common cold. But I was told it's even worse, because if it does get into the nucleus, and by the way, there are pathways into the nucleus. This is how herpes gets into you for life. This is how a great many chicken pox get into you for life. They get into the nucleus where the immune system can't get at them. They reproduce. Chicken pox comes back as shingles. This is a lifetime thing. If it gets into the nucleus and reproduces, these proteins can then attach to, say, I don't know, the cells of your eye. And then when your immune system attacks the alien protein, it can end up mistaking the cells of the eye for an alien substance. That's called autoimmune, and you go blind. So you might have, let's just say that COVID-19 is a legitimate illness that doesn't affect most people, will kill almost no one when you catch it, will almost give no one any symptoms. Let's say that that's true. What if COVID-19, though, is getting into your system or can't quite get into the nucleus or can't quite get into the nucleus, but you take a vaccine that can? And then you end up with a lifetime of autoimmune and everything else under the sun. So this is merely being used, as you say, a plandemic, merely being used. Maybe it will get into the nucleus. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will cause you a couple symptoms. Maybe you'll have a runny nose. Probably you won't. But what they're going to do is they're going to say to all the white people, as they've been saying, and I'll pass it back here. Remember when it started, Mark? We covered the story here. We're in New Orleans. White people or Louisiana, white people went out to the beach and they showed photographs of white people on the beach without masks on. And they said that they're killing everybody. The white people are killing everybody with COVID-19. Look at the beach, all the white people on the beach. They're killing everybody. The very next day, the riots started in the United States, the destruction of Western civilization, the very next day. And they were out in the streets by the tens of thousands, no masks. And they were given license to do so, carte blanche to do so. No more was the claim that they're killing all of society without wearing masks. No, but this was a righteous thing that had to be done. Western civilization had to be torn down. No, this and what's being done to Donald Trump, who was never white positive. We never liked him here, but we knew what he did for patriots. He and Pence, COVID-19, and the rest of it are being used in every way they possibly can to advance anti-whiteism. And now is the time for our people around the world to say enough is enough.
Very powerful words, and I do agree. I think we're reaching a point where it's now or never, where we're being really pushed into a position where, unfortunately, if we don't fight for our freedoms now, we will never, ever be able to get them back. And remember, it's much easier to fight for something that you've got and to defend something you've got than it is to get that thing back when you've lost it. When you've got your hands on something, it is easier to fight to protect it than it is to fight to reclaim it when you no longer have your hands on it. And if these people take away our freedoms, if these people bring in these tyrannical laws without there being any pushback, unfortunately, turning that around at a later date is going to be much, much more difficult. What do you think to that, Richard? Do you think this is a time where people, is this now or never? Do you think things can ever go back to normal after this?
Well, it's interesting. I got a text message from a friend of mine recently. He bought me some quite fancy cheese for Christmas, and I texted him and said, thank you for the cheese. It actually went down really well with a nice glass of whiskey. And he said, oh, I've got some nice whiskey. And when this is all over, I'll share it with you over some cheese. And this is something, a little coping mechanism that I've been noticing a lot of people have been using recently. Is that when this is over, forgetting the fact that the first lockdown was for 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You know, and if we're going into a third lockdown, it proves in itself that lockdowns don't actually work. And I'm sick to death of people trying to tell me that the healthy population need to take a vaccination, which at best case scenario is an untested vaccine. Now, I've had the privilege, because my missus works for the NHS, of getting the data, the PDFs on this, on the vaccines and stuff like that. And it scares the life out of me. There's a section on there, section 5 or section 6, I think, of the PDF that I received, and I'll see about sharing it. But it's like about fertility. If you're thinking about having children or planning to have children, they don't recommend it. There's no, there's been absolutely no studies with people taking other medications either. And they've done such a small grouping with regards to the tests. And most of these tests, let's not forget, when we normally distribute vaccines across the country, it's like a 10-year process, which has been fast-tracked. But it scares the life out of me, the willingness of people to do it. But not only do it, but they're doing what I think is called the mother at the gates theory, which is where you have mums stood at the school gate, and their little Timmy goes to trampoline class or whatever it may be after school. And they'll say to another mum, oh, you should get Greg to go to trampoline as well. He would really love it. They don't actually give a shit about Greg. Sorry, excuse my language. They don't care about Greg. They just want to reaffirm their own decision, to make sure that they know that they're making the right decision. So what you have is a load of people trying to convince each other to get this vaccine, I think. I've seen Jim Davidson come out and say it. I've seen Nigel Farage, yeah, come out and support Tony Blair over this vaccine. What world am I living in? I cannot believe it. You do not have to vaccinate a healthy population. Here's the best advice you're going to get. Exercise. Eat healthy. Statistically speaking, this is not going to affect you anyway. You know, if from a from my, you know, my missus doing the ambulance stuff, she's been sat on her ass most of the time. You know, that you'd think the way that they're talking about it on the telly is it should be whizzing about, rushed off of her feet, picking everybody up. Everyone's dying. It's not the case. It is not the case. In the past 2 or 3 days, I think she's had 6 COVID patients, and only one of them was showing like physical symptoms, hard to breathe, that sort of thing, who was very elderly anyway. And that just says a lot about this. I'm not seeing people piling up in the streets. I'm not seeing lots of deaths, lots of excess deaths anyway. I don't want to live in a country that is just full of fear. I'm not scared of catching COVID, and I don't want anybody else to be. If you go back 18 months or so, I used to work in a workshop at that time before COVID happened, and I can remember my mate coming in, and he got a cold or flu off of his daughter and was jokingly sort of chasing me around, sneezing behind me, trying to give it to me, you know what I mean? Like, that's that sort of attitude, you know? And it was just kind of like, we just had that thing. Now I'm out on my runs and I see people like doing this, like lifting their shirts up and scarves and whatever, and throwing themselves into a hedge of, you know, literally trying to putting themselves into the road. Like, I've seen a woman the other day to get round me when I was running. She pushed her child out into the road with a pram, you know, without really looking. She's more scared of me, this guy who's running along, doing 5-minute miles, and she's like willing to push her own child out into the road to avoid breathing any of the same air as me. But the thing is, if I had a piece of cloth over my face, she probably would have felt a lot more comfortable about it. And that just tells you everything you need to know about the psychology. People are calling for people to be wearing masks outside. So I go out and walk my dogs and I see normal, healthy people wearing gloves and masks out in the middle of the woods, and there's nobody around. These people are mentally ill. They've been living a life of fear, and this propaganda that's been perpetuated to them through the media has to stop, and it has to stop yesterday, and it is our duty to shut them down with facts. And that's exactly why what's happening is happening, what you talked about a minute ago, Mark. All these voices are being silence, all these dissident voices, because you're telling the truth. The truth is on our side, and the truth should never fear scrutiny. Keep telling the truth.
Richard, let me just keep you talking for 1 second, and I put a message to you there. What are your thoughts on the fact that Miami University did a study about the potential of the sperm being damaged for men, and actually stating that if you are a man and you're thinking about getting the vaccine, it wouldn't be a bad idea. You want to have children in the future. It wouldn't be a bad idea to have your sperm frozen. What are your, because you were just talking about the exact subject right there as you were speaking. So please.
Yeah, I mean, what crazy times. What I would suggest for everybody to do is to look at these vaccines. First of all, I wouldn't recommend getting the vaccine under any circumstances, and you can use that as an excuse, because there is no data on the fertility. So if you're someone who's considering having a child, or you're, you know, something you're looking at in the future, do not take an untested vaccine where even these people who clearly hate you are saying, have a think about it. And I thought it was quite interesting. I can't remember, I think it might have been Berkeley or Harvard or one of those sort of prestigious schools over in America, perhaps Jason will know, where they were actually excluding the BAME community in those within those schools from taking it, because they didn't want them to feel like it was recreating this slavery environment where they're forced to do something they didn't want to do. I thought, oh, how interesting, how convenient that it would be mandatory for all the pupils or the students, sorry, that are going to that university to do it, except for the black students, because we don't want to make them feel oppressed. So, and if it does affect your fertility rate, what you're actually seeing there is genocide. The young, youthful population of America, white, healthy population, potentially being destroyed sexually, and they cannot carry on their genome. And then a group of people, BAME, black and minority ethnic, which otherwise means anybody who's not white, being excluded from that. And there's all the proof you need. All the proof is in the pudding.
Well, I've spoken about this before, and I was smiling when you were saying about people diving into the road to get past you, because just before Christmas, we took Sophia to a Christmas walk. It was a Peter Rabbit Christmas walk, and it was in these woods, and as you were walking into the woods, the woman who was at the gate was telling people that there was hand sanitizer in the woods for people who wanted it. Can you imagine the insanity of putting on hand sanitizer outside to walk around in the woods to see cutouts of Peter Rabbit and other Peter Rabbit related characters in the woods? I mean, It's so absurd. It's so insane. It's almost, if it wasn't so serious, you'd be laughing. And I've seen this. We'll be walking down the street as a family. We won't have our masks on. We don't like wearing the masks. We don't like wearing them anywhere we go. But we'll be walking around down the street without our masks on. And there will be people who are looking at you as if you're evil. And I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I remember going to the gym before they closed the gyms again, which is, again, another crime. Robbing people of their ability to stay fit it's a crime. It's the kind of thing that they would say, oh, war criminals put people in concentration camps and they weren't allowed the right amount of physical exercise. We're all under house arrest. We're not allowed the right amount of physical exercise. It's insane. But there was people at the gym who would hand sanitize before they used any equipment, and they'd be training with a mask on. It's insane. The level of fear that these people have propagated is maddening. It's absolutely maddening. But we have been going for more than an hour, and I've got some super chats. Remember, there is still plenty of time if you'd like to contribute to the show. All contributions are very, very gratefully received, and any contributions to the show go towards, well, basically helping me to carry on doing this. So if you would like to contribute, as I said, that would be very, very much appreciated. So please, if you can or if you want to, that's really good. We do have some super chats there, but I was thinking that once we get through these super chats tonight, we could do something special to end the show. I don't want to put you on the spot here, Richard, but you are a talented musician. Would you like to? We've never actually had a musical piece on the show, but those guitars are hanging there. And I was wondering if you would like to play us out with something at the end of the show.
Well, I'll certainly give it a go for you, Mark. Of course, yeah, if that's what you'd like.
Look, people have been messaging me saying, put him on the spot, ask him if he wants to do it. If you want to beat these people after the show for putting you on the spot, I will give you their names, so don't worry. And if you don't want to do it, you can say no. It's just people have been saying, get him to give us a song. I would hate to be put on the spot like that, but people have been messaging me. They say, oh, it's your thing, you wouldn't be offended. So if I have offended you, that was not my intention. You can say no, have a think about it. And if you'd like to play us out with something, that would be a great way to end the show. But we do have some super chats. And I said, any super chats are gratefully received. The best way to do it is through Entropy, and these generous super chats do allow me to work full time doing this. So let's do some of these. A Bailiff Basher gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, throughout history, as money lending evolved into institutionalized banking, a certain tribe continued to occupy disproportionate major positions in the financial world, which continues into modern times. How do we stop this stranglehold on the banking and financial sectors? Keep up the good work. And this also goes hand in hand with a question asked by Kelt that says, what money system should the country have? Fiat, asset-backed, crypto, and why? Well, I'll say we need, first and foremost, to have asset-backed currency. We need a currency that is backed with real wealth. And fractional reserve banking has to come to an end. This creating money out of nowhere and then using that money to enslave people in chains of usury has to end. And when PA achieves more power, we have a 20-point plan, and part of that plan is to outlaw these payday loan companies, to reinstitute legislation that kept these predators in check. Now, I've got to say this. We've been talking a lot about legislation today that harms us as people, legislation that is designed to take away our rights. And isn't it funny that it was always the other way around? Legislation was always created to control the worst aspects of the capitalist corporate world. So legislation would always tie up big companies. It would stop them lending money unscrupulously. It would stop them doing things such as forming giant monopolies and then exploiting their power. It would prevent media companies all being the hands of one person. And all of this legislation was actually tying up corporations and preventing them from exploiting us. And it seems, doesn't it, that as our governments have slowly weakened the legislation that kept these companies in check, they have conversely increased legislation that is now keeping us in check. So the people preying on us are now more free than ever to prey on us, but we as people are less free to fight back, or less free to form any form of resistance or even speak out against that. So I hope that's a sufficient answer. Would anyone else like to comment on the issue of banking or usury? Would you guys like to make comments on that?
Richard, not interested. Okay, I'll just quickly say that I agree fundamentally with what Mark is saying, and I think that I know that in the future we will develop, and the idea for those of us who are going free is that once we recapture our destiny, brilliant members of our community will be able to come forward. They will shed the meme pathogens, the anti-white ideas that are preventing us from accessing our true potentials physically, mentally, and spiritually. And they will finally develop a economic and government system that will work for the ages, because it will be cyclical. We are cyclical animals, and so we need something that can cycle with us. The reason why throughout history we have seen these static institutions get created, and then within a generation, we begin having to put these, as you all in the UK call, plasters or band-aids on them to try to keep them going, is because they were static, they were meant for an age, and we cycled out of that particular spot, and they didn't cycle with us. So I think in the future, we'll look back on a lot of the systems we have today as really archaic and barbarian almost, and certainly we'll be able to easily identify the venomous creatures that slithered their way into those static institutions and then use them for their benefit.
I will just jump in there for a sec, because I feel it's a bit of a cop-out. I'm not really an economist. I have recently read History of Central Banking, and I would recommend for anyone who's interested in this sort of thing, it just goes over a brief history of usury and things like that. And I think all I can do really is reiterate what Mark's already said. And fractional reserve banking and usury are two of the biggest problems that happens in our financial systems. And I would like to see those things eradicated. And in their place, as Jason said there, something that is both spiritually and economically viable for our people and for the future. I think I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, thank you very much. And we'll move on to the next super chat. As I said, there is still time to super chat if you wish to. Lutz Zero gave a generous $25. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said the following: "Hey, Mark, sorry for camping you in solos on Sunday. I wasn't screen sniping, I swear. Hope to see you this weekend. Side note, I love the Warzone, fellas. Met a lot of great people in such a short time." Well, thank you, Lutz Zero, not for shooting me with a shotgun directly in the face, but for giving me $25. It's very generous of you. And another success story there. I know that's not everyone's cup of tea, but it is a really, really nice thing to hear that so many people are coming and getting involved in the gaming tournaments and other PA initiatives, and they're meeting real friends. I've said this before on other streams. I'm not sure if I said this on PWR, but I had a very, very touching email from a young lad the other week who had been a little bit isolated, and he's been involved in both the Warzone tournaments so far. He's met a group of people. He's chatting to them. He's gaming with them regularly. He's talking nationalism with people, and he's not as isolated. That is why we do this. We do this to help people. It's a bit of fun. And to those people who keep spamming me with comments like, "Why are you wasting your time doing this, Mark?" Well, it's Sunday night. It's 9 p.m. If you want to march on Whitehall at 9 p.m. on a Sunday evening when it's snowing outside, be my guest. You be my guest, but I will be doing something a bit more laid back and chilled out. And if that helps young people beat their isolation, beat their loneliness, and meet other like-minded people, I can sleep well at night knowing that I facilitated that. So thank you, Lutz Zero. And no hard feelings about you shooting me with that shotgun. At the time, I was a little sore, but I've got over it. I've slept, so thank you. Dreadnought 1983 gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, "Is the scamdemic the largest overreach in Jewish history? If so, how do we capitalize on that?" I think it is. I think people are very much sick of this. I think people have had enough of this. I think people don't want any more of this. I think people are at the end of their tether. And I speak to many people who are feeling the pain with this. I speak to people who are depressed. I speak to people who are pulling their hair out. And I am deeply affected by this. Not myself, because I genuinely am not somebody that has felt this particularly, because I just sort of crack on with things. But I know people who have. It's affected my girlfriend. It's affected my daughter. It stopped her seeing her friends. It stopped her going to her classes. She loves climbing. I know this sounds crazy because she's not even 18 months, but she loves climbing. And she used to go to Tumble Tots and she loved it. Can't go there anymore. She can't go there anymore. It might seem small, but it's very upsetting for me, not because of things that I'm losing out on, but things that my daughter's losing out on. And I speak to other people, and when I start saying this, they come out of their shell and they say, yeah, Mark, I agree. I feel the same way. It's a scandal. I don't like it one bit. But do you know what? It took me to say it to them to get them saying it. And that's something that's really important for everybody to remember. It takes a lot to get normies to voice their opinion. It takes a lot to get normal people talking our talking points, even if they feel it, because they're scared. And this environment of fear, this police state, makes them more scared. And I look at these people and I want to give them hope. And you don't have to do much to give them that little bit of hope. You don't have to do much to help these people. You just have to reach out. It's as much as smiling at somebody in the supermarket when they pull their mask down. It's as much as somebody saying, oh, there's hand sanitizer there, and you say, I don't believe in this nonsense. It's only killed 388 people who are under the age of 60 with no underlying health conditions since the beginning of this whole load of nonsense. You know, it's as much as saying to a business owner, you shouldn't have to close your business, mate. This is a scandal. And so many people that I've spoken to like this have then come out of their shell and agreed wholeheartedly. But it's our job as nationalists, it's our job as community leaders, it's our job as people who want to save our race and save our nation, to have those conversations and to be the ones who start those conversations. And in today's world, having Christmas dinner with your family, taking your daughter out for a walk, having these conversations, they are all small acts, but they are revolutionary acts. And if you look at yourself as a revolutionary that wants to save our race, that wants to save our people, do something. It might only be something small, but start a conversation with somebody tomorrow. Do that and help these people find themselves and find their strength. Do you guys have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I was in a petrol station before Christmas, and I'm sure like a lot of the audience feels, if they're not wearing masks, and I don't wear the mask, You get to, after a while, feel quite disenfranchised and really put down by the fact that everyone's looking at you like you've got a chicken on your head, and you feel like an outsider in your own community. And I think that that's exactly the reason that the mask exists, is this demoralising, dehumanising tool, this weapon that they use to kind of create all this segregation and separation between us. But I had this amazing moment where I went into a petrol station in the work van, and then two builders came in, and neither of them were wearing their masks either, and they kind of looked at me, and we had this sort of sacred nod of, we didn't have to say anything. And we almost had our own revolution inside this petrol station. It was just such an amazing moment. This guy had ordered a pasty or whatever it was from this little bakery that was there, he got his pasty and he took it out and took a bite of it, and this woman came running out from round the back of the petrol station who worked there. She's like, you can't eat that in here because of COVID and blah blah blah. And this guy just went to town on her in front of the whole petrol station, and there was quite a lot of people in there. And he just really just dropped the stats on her. He kind of just made her feel quite small. She had no rebuttal, no comeback, no nothing. And there was just this dead silence afterwards. And I could see the people in the queue literally considering taking their masks off, or looking at least at the floor in shame that they bought into this absolutely stupid narrative that they'd been bombarded with every single day on their stupid televisions. And it was a revolutionary moment. And so what I'm saying is, you have to get out there. You have to have these, if someone else is not wearing a mask, do the nod, you know, do the special nod, and it's like your own revolution in your petrol stations.
Listen, very quickly, that's a brilliant story, Richard, and thank you for sharing it. That is exactly what Mark was saying to do, and it's one of these moments that something can be said that can just pass, could walk right by somebody, and they not see the value in what was said. If you didn't see the value in what Mark was just saying to do, and Richard just saying he did, then you need to make sure you go back once we're finished with the show today and listen to that over again, because there's a great deal of value and substance in what Mark was admonishing everyone to do and what Richard is already living.
Thank you. Great support of this show. Lovely lady, Serena JB, gave £5. Thank you very much. She says, before he was ostracized from music venues, did Richard come across anyone who actually agreed with him and who perhaps were too scared to speak out?
No. In short, no. Most of the music scene is very woke. I have to admit, you know, in order to climb the ladder musically, your music has to reflect that to a large extent. I tell you what I did see that was quite... positive. I saw a revival of traditional music as well, but they would never get these kind of big slots at festivals and stuff like that. More often than not, they didn't even get to play on the stage. But these people were using traditional Celtic instruments and things like that, and just walking around playing to people. And the engagement that they got was tenfold to what people were getting on stage, because it was right in front of those people's very eyes. And I'm sure that these traditional musicians were based. They would have to be to fall in love with your own culture and your own heritage that much, to take up an instrument that you cannot even get lessons in anymore and teach it to yourself, requires such an extensive passion and knowledge towards that thing that it's really nice. And I'm sure that there is some sort of genetic element in there, because these instruments and these songs resonate within me. They make the hair stand up on my neck and my arms when I hear them. And I absolutely love that element of our music. And again, to see it in American culture as well. This time in Manifest Destiny, where a lot of English folk and Welsh people were going up to the mountains of Appalachia, promised this land of golden opportunity. And what they found was struggle. And they turned these positive folklorian English songs into these very painful sounding, beautiful music, which then developed into bluegrass and things like that. It's something you can hear in your genes, and you can hear it in this music as well. And I think that is something very positive about it. So yeah, I hadn't really met anybody who was like a nationalist, for example, but I did meet a few people that were tremendously proud of their heritage. And I think that in itself is quite a positive thing to take away from it.
Well, thank you very much. For camaraderie gave $10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, good evening, Mark, Jason and Richard. PWR is the highlight of my week. Always good to tune in and get some truth, facts and wisdom. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Syrup gave £5. Now, this is a very good question, but I cannot answer it. He said, did you see Arnold Schwarzenegger's tired and tedious video about the Capitol protest? He did 10 seconds bemoaning the event, then a 6-minute tribute to the suffering of Jews in 1938. He seemed even less masculine than the new Cadbury's cream egg advert. Well, I heard about the Arnold Schwarzenegger rant, and I didn't watch it. And I didn't watch it because I didn't want to be annoyed by it, and I knew I would be annoyed by it. And I was thinking a little bit about Arnold Schwarzenegger and about his career and about who he is as a man and about his decline. And I actually came to an interesting conclusion about Schwarzenegger's decline. And when you look at him as a man, money and fame actually turned him into a wreck, didn't it? Because in his early career, when he didn't have much money or as much fame, he was in great physical shape. He was a fantastic looking physical specimen. But he was also in some amazing films. And if you look at the films he was in his youth, films like Predator, Conan, The Terminator, those films are classics. They're films that I still enjoy to this day. They're films that... you know, if you, I don't watch TV anymore, but I used to always go to sleep in front of the TV, and there were kind of films that if you saw on a late night showing, you could always, oh, bang the Terminator on, bang on Predator. That's a fantastic film. And they're films that were just really good fun. And I always used to remember as a youngster, there'd always be Schwarzenegger season on ITV, and they would put like 10 weeks with 10 Schwarzenegger films. And you'd be looking forward to ones like Red Heat, even some of the lesser known Schwarzenegger films. But as he got more money, as he became a bigger star, he actually made rubbish films. And if you think of the films he actually made the most money from, the later films in the Terminator franchise, they're all junk. Films like The Last Action Hero, total junk. Films like, oh, what was that? There was a really, he did a really, really terrible one. Batman and Robin, that was it. Absolutely awful. And you can see how a man who used to be a real role model for young men, a strong, masculine, physically fit, focused man, got sucked into the system and almost became some soy-filled parody of his former self. And I think the Schwarzenegger experience is very telling. What do you guys think about this? Have you actually seen the Schwarzenegger rant?
I haven't actually seen the rant, but I had the exact same reaction as you did. You can almost predict what these people are going to say at this point. But something resonated with me with what you've just said is about how money corrupts people. It corrupts their morality, and it corrupts their, you know, their very composition, their mindset. And you can see that. And so many of our people are obsessed right now with acquiring more money and more success. And it's something that's destroyed our people, especially with women. They are now under this delusion that motherhood is something negative, being at home, being in the kitchen, cooking, looking after the house, something which is quite an arduous job and a tremendous responsibility. That is kind of looked down on by society now. And they're taught to be these career progressing, you know, business bitches, you know, and it's something that's destroying us as a society, and I absolutely hate that about us at the moment, and we definitely need to get out of that. But money doesn't make you happy, and if you don't believe me, just look at the statistics. Rich people kill themselves all the time. They kill themselves all the time because they are constantly trying to ascertain something that you just cannot get. I used to work in a gym, and I watched bodybuilders who would look like Greek sculptures standing in the mirror and saying, I could improve this, or I could improve that. And there is a certain element of that in our nature. But if you choose to channel that into something negative, like acquiring money and wealth and capital, you will destroy yourself, and part of your soul goes missing. It really does. I was walking the other day with my mum, and she lives on this street, and there's quite a big house at the bottom, quite a wealthy couple who's made all of their money from selling contracts to the NHS, and they had their own tennis courts. And I'm thinking, how could you live with yourself, having made all of that money off of something that's supposed to be helping the people? The mismanagement of the NHS is something that is apparent and abundant to everyone. It's right there for you to see. And then to go off the back of that and make money off of something that's founded to help people. Shame on these people. Shame on these people. They have no bounds. And the sadder they get inside, the more they pursue it, until eventually they'll end up killing themselves with drugs or whatever it is they can get their hands on, because their life hasn't been fulfilled. And this is why it's important for our real life meets, where we get to go outside and see what's truly valuable about us as a people. It's this country. And it's only England. It's only Britain, because it's full of British people. And all these trees that they're chopping down to build houses for God knows who, okay, that's part of who we are as a people. That's part of what makes you spiritually happy. And if you think you're going to get that happiness from a fancy car or all these fancy clothes or diamonds or whatever it is that you choose to spend your money on, you're simply not. But going out for a walk in the daytime is twice as rewarding as anything that capitalism has had to offer me. And that's all I'll say on that.
Both of you covered it beautifully. We can continue with the great questions and comments we have from the community.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. Mr. Bloom gave $20. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, I was saddened to hear today that my nan had taken the vaccine. It really is horrible to see your family buy into the narrative that the government has has their best interest at heart, especially when it's so hard to reach them and convince them otherwise. Great work as always, Mark, and Promethean hails to Jason. Thank you very much, Mr. Bloom, and I'm sorry to hear about your grandma. Auto Nature gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, how should we deal with MAGA types who refuse to move on and desperately cling to Trump and Q-type phenomenon? Do you think Trump's term was a benefit? I think Trump wasn't a great president, but I think he legitimized... oh, you disappeared there, Jason.
Yeah, I don't know why.
But you're back. I think Trump's term wasn't great in terms of what he did, but he did legitimize talk about mass immigration. He did massively, massively undermine people's faith in the media. He did expose the fact there is a deep state conspiracy. He did get people talking about demographics. He did cause massive polarization. He did cause the Democrats and the anti-whites to show their hand. And he might have also done one final massive favor for us, which is, of course, he has just split the GOP. He has just damaged the mainstream Republican movement more than anyone ever has in the past. And you can't deny these things he has done. But on the other hand, he has inspired these Q-tards. And what we have to do is explain to the people who believe in Q that, as Devin Stack says, there isn't someone coming to rescue you. Daddy isn't going to come and make it all right. There isn't some master plan to rescue you. The global elite doesn't have an equal and opposing force known as the global good guy elite that have some wonderful mega plan that Trump was the head of. There was no plan. The only way to save our civilization is to get off our asses and do it ourselves. We cannot sit at home reading Q-tard nonsense, waiting for Trump and all these generals and people in positions of power in the police and the FBI and the CIA that are yet to show their hand to overthrow the anti-whites and restore free speech and order and our rights. If we want our rights, if we want freedom of speech, if we want to overthrow tyranny, we have to do it ourselves. If we want a future for our children, and if we want to be the masters of our own destiny, we have to go out and work for it. This is not a Hollywood movie. We can't just sit on the couch waiting for it to play out. We have to get off the benches, get in the game, and do something before it's too late. What do you guys think? Do you think we can get through to these Q-tards?
Well, I think there's certainly potential. Someone that stands out in my mind is Alistair Williams. I don't know if you're familiar with that guy and his channel, but I watched him go from this just sort of normal guy speaking out about a few things. I think he's from London or somewhere like that. And next thing you know, he's like full on QAnon. His logo is the QAnon and all this kind of stuff. And my thought on that whole thing was that, I mean, they're so virulent in their... you know, they just really thought that that was what it was going to be. Daddy is going to come and save us. Trump is the, you know, the greatest of all time. He's going to save our people and all this kind of stuff. But my thought was always, okay, but what if he's not? What's your plan B? And surely after the events that took place at Capitol Hill, now is the time to start asking yourself that question if you are buying into these theories. It's like Mark's just said there, that there is really, I can't see any great saviour. Everybody that I see that has potential either is stomped out by the system or eventually joins it. And that is a problem. We shouldn't be looking to individuals. We should be looking to each other at this point and sort of collectivising and finding strength in each other and really just kind of getting together and assessing how we're going to move forward. There is no one that's going to come out of the woodwork now and lead the charge on Westminster and Washington DC and save you all single-handedly. These movements take, you know, it takes effort from a collective. And it only takes a few thousand good men. That's all it really takes, I think, in some circumstances. So don't be disheartened when you see 80% of the population walking around like mask-wearing, face-nappy-wearing zombies, you know, because if that other 20% is looking after their health, reading books, pursuing the truth and believes in our people and wants to preserve that, then we've got a bloody good chance, I think.
A lot of people are asking this question. I think it's a really bright question, and I'll just briefly say, and we get back to the questions and comments, because the Q movement was so huge. And at the same time, so active. These people were not just sitting around. I mean, they were going out and attending rallies. Now, that was their only function. That was the only thing they did, was go to rallies. But that's an important function when it comes to trying to recapture our destiny. The problem that we have to overcome is not just a matter of getting in front of them, but it is a matter of transitioning them. Because what they had done and what they were doing, Richard was just brilliantly speaking to this reality, was they were essentially buying an excuse to do nothing by believing in Q. And that excuse to do nothing is a very valuable thing. So talking them out of doing nothing to doing something is something we have to be creative about. And I have some ideas, and perhaps we'll roll something out in the next couple of weeks or so. But I pass it back.
Thank you. Well, we've got a bit of a spicy super chat here from Ordo Nature. He gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, is it significant that Nick Fuentes was given a donation of 13.5 bitcoins? And if so, would that have an effect on why some American nationalists supported Trump despite the overwhelming evidence he was pro-Zionist? Well, I don't want to get into a war of words with Nick Fuentes, and I think some of the work he does is very good. Obviously, that is a very, very significant donation. And Nick Fuentes, I mean, I've got to say this, that's a lot of money. You know, Bitcoin's about £25,000 here in the UK at the moment. That's, you know, he's been given probably in American dollars about best part of $500,000 there in a single donation. And I know he's been doing very well for himself. I know he's taken a lot of money. And I know that he has increasingly led people down this Trump road, down the road. He's gone from being more explicitly ethno-nationalist, more, could you say, edgy, more against the Trump movement. He started the Groyper movement to try and realign young people away from the Charlie Kirks and to a more sort of community-based ethno-nationalist outlook. And at one point he seemed to be talking about that quite a bit. He seemed to want to break people away from this sort of more multicultural pro-Zionist movement. He was encouraging people to groip people, but then he jumped on the Trump train wholeheartedly. He has obviously taken a lot of donations, and I'm not begrudging him that. You know, if people are doing good work, they deserve remuneration. You know, if you're doing this full time, I do this full time, you know, people get paid from donations, and I'm certainly not begrudging people making a living. But I do think he has led a lot of people down this Trump road. And where is that exactly going to lead in a few days, a few weeks, you know, a few months? Is there going to be anything left of the Trump movement? And I would have preferred it if he had maybe stuck to his more what seemed to be his original plan of leading people down an ethno-nationalist route. And that's not to knock him. It's not to say that he's done terrible work. I don't want a war of words. I don't have any beef with him. I just believe that people have potentially been taken down this sort of Trump route, and whether there will be a Trump movement to speak of. Because if Trump decides, well, that's it for him, and he's going off to play golf all over the world, or, you know, go and live in Dubai and play golf in Dubai for the rest of his life, what will all these people do? And that's a concern. What do you guys think? Do you think this big donation was suspicious? Do you think there's something to be said for not leading people down the Trump road, or do you think he did the right thing?
I think I'm going to pass this one over to Jason, because I've got a feeling that there's nothing I can say that he won't include, and I bet he's more clued up about it than I am, so I'm going to pass the torch on to Jason on this one.
I'll quickly say that I don't know, this idea that perhaps that he's leading people to Trump because Trump will give money to Israel. Well, so will Biden. Biden's going to give as much money to Israel as Trump would have ever given. Biden's going to go to Israel, and he's going to bend over and grab his ankles and kiss the wall and whatever else they have to do over there. So same thing's going to be done by both candidates. I think probably what happened with Nick is that in the U.S., and I don't know if it's the same way in the U.K. or not, or elsewhere across the West, but we have a huge strata of older people, not old people, but older people who have this mindset that they're going to be able to put somebody in office and then everything's going to be all better. And they are just mired there. They can't get out of this quagmire. And when they see young people that they feel could fit or push the, the sort of bureaucratic stereotype and perhaps could run for office, even though, I mean, Nick knows very well, he could never run and win in the United States, not just because the anti-whites control the dissemination of information, but because they've demonstrated quite clearly that they are far better than Vegas at rigging the system to achieving any outcome that they want. But because this guy has said things that no normal, ordinary American would ever vote for. They would be dying in the streets before they would ever agree to murdering whole groups of this group of non-white people and that group of white people who happen to think this way and this and the kind of things that he has said, even though he sometimes pretends that he's in jest with these things. He knows very well that he couldn't get elected. I think he's talked about it before. But a lot of these older people with big money relative to me, you know, they're not big compared to actual Republican or Democrat donors. They have the real money. They are the kind that on a moment's notice would make a very silly and unwise decision to try to endorse another political campaign, another political endeavor with a massive sum of money like this. It might not even be one individual. So I would think that, you know, it might be a combo of individuals that got together to do that. I've seen it for decades in this country, and it brings nothing but chagrin, because no matter how many defeats they see in the political sphere in the U.S., and it's probably different elsewhere in the Western world, but in the U.S., there is no hope in hell of winning an office. As you can see with Donald Trump, there is no hope in hell of winning an office and then effectuating outcomes that are antithetical to anti-white objectives. They have too many nodes of power. They will resist you illegally. It's just not possible whatsoever. Right now, as I speak, I didn't mention this earlier, the military is on the streets of Washington, D.C. The military is moving into every state capital in the United States, not because finally Donald Trump decided to make them act, but because the Democrats happily will use the military against the population. And the military, just like the police on the Capitol, will happily effectuate though whatever the Democrat ends might be. So I hope he just had, not only was he kicked off DLive, as you mentioned, Mark, but he also just had his website taken down. So I guess with that money, he'll be making a comeback with websites and maybe servers. Who knows? But best of luck to him.
Yeah, definitely. Best of luck to him. Look, I don't have any beef with him. I hope he leads people in the correct route. I hope he supports ethno-nationalism. And I hope he sees now that mainstream GOP support is never going to be forthcoming from him. He has a huge audience. I just hope he leads that audience towards genuine community building and really, really large scale events, which he could easily pull off because he's had 50,000 people watching his streams. That's massive, massive numbers. He's done very well for himself. I just hope he converts those numbers to something in the real world, because the real world activity is very, very necessary. And I want to say again, I don't begrudge him the money, and I certainly don't believe that the money is some form of payoff. And the reason I don't believe it's some form of payoff is because we know about it. If Nick Fuentes had been paid off by some secret Zionist backer, they would have told him to set up a Swiss bank account, plopped the money in there, and it'd be completely secret. They wouldn't have done it openly as they have. So I hope I've been clear about that. And anyone who thinks I've been uncharitable to him, I don't think I have. I think I've been very honest. I think he's doing good work, but I hope he takes it down a genuine ethno-nationalist route, because I think we can all see now, if America does go majority non-white, that is the America that people know and love gone forever. Rory Herbert gave $5. Thank you very much, Rory. And he said, in 1982, the SAS were bouncing Morse code transmission off the ionosphere from the Falklands via Ascension Island to their base in Hereford, UK. Do you think that Morse code or digital burst transmissions might be the future of nationalist communications? I don't think it'll go that far. I think we can still exploit the internet, but I think we have to exploit the internet our own way. That means we have to own the servers, we have to have the setup, we have to be in charge of everything ourselves. We can't rely on Amazon, we can't rely on Google, we can't rely on Apple, we have to do it ourselves. The Flying Dutchman gave $35. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. He said, remember her name. Ashley Babbitt was her name. Thank you very much, Flying Dutchman. Old Mother Earth gave $3. Thank you very much. And said, I am female and 5 foot tall, and yet I have had uppity middle-class men giving me evils as I do not wear a mask with what I put on my body cam. I realized how easy it was to make him uncomfortable. Thank you, Old Mother Earth. You've put a smile on my face. Keep up the good work and keep intimidating them by smiling at them. Thank you so much. That has given me a chuckle. And finally, Dave CC gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, Morrison's turned me away without a mask yesterday. It's getting stupider. Thank you for the stream. Well, thank you for the £10. And that is the end of the donated super chats. If you want to contribute, if you want to help me, if you want to support this show, and keep me working full time for this cause, I've just dropped the entropy link in the chat now. There is still time to make a donation. And we have a very interesting final question. It says, it's a non-paid one, and it says, it's time to grow and learn. Mark, what is your personal opinion that female equality by law since 1920 has been the doom blow for Western European nations and to whites in general by making them via generation too emphatic? I don't agree. I don't think it was the Female Equality Act that has defeated us. I don't believe it was feminism on its own. I don't believe there is one single thing that has defeated us. I would say that it has been a range of different attacks on our people, on our mindset, that has shattered our community. And there have been people who've talked about feminism tonight. There have been people who've talked about the media. There have been people who've talked about banking and usury. We could have talked about materialism. We could have talked about the way the media has promoted race mixing and has forced us to be more and more sympathetic towards people that we shouldn't have any sympathy for. We could have talked about the drugs epidemic. We could have talked about rising alcoholism. We could have talked about the destruction of manufacturing and primary industry, which has robbed communities of a sense of worth. And we could have talked about many, many other things. And I'm sure there's people in the chat saying, Mark mentioned this, but we could have mentioned a lot of things. And all of those things together have worked in conjunction with one another to destroy us as a people. I've written a book called The Fall of Western Man. I do plug it occasionally on this show. And I think it's about, how many pages is it? I think it might be about 250, 260 pages. There's a lot of pages. And it took me a while to write it. I think it's about 120,000 words. And in that, I talk about many things, including feminism and the way that equality for women has been used as a stick with which to beat the West and break down our communities. But saying it's just feminism, saying it's just men having manly pursuits taken away, saying it's just the media, saying it's just anything is nonsense. This is a very well planned, coordinated, and highly orchestrated attack on our people, which has many, many different branches and arms, and there are many facets to it. And we can't underestimate the effect of any of those things. And whilst the women's liberation movement has played a massive part in this attack, it's not the be all and end all. There isn't one single thing which has been the linchpin to our downfall. I genuinely believe that. And if you want to read my book, it is free. So pick up a copy at www.thefallofwesternman.com. A final super chat from Galileo's Tonga gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, great show. Question for all three of you. What do you think the people who sell their own people out say to themselves to justify what they are doing to convince themselves they are good people? Very quick answer. I don't think they convince themselves they're good people. I think those that sell out their people, those who inform to the police or other agencies, do so basically for the reasons Richard the Lionheart mentioned earlier. They do it because they're obsessed with money and because they want a way out of this movement for one reason or another. And they take the route they do for financial gain. What do you guys think? Very quickly, because we're coming up on the end of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the exact same thing. I mean, money is a terrible, terrible thing when used in that fashion. And I think Tolkien was quite good at talking about this in his books, when you have sort of the dwarves, they're corrupted by gold, aren't they? And the only sort of creature in that whole realm that could withstand it was a dragon, and all he did was sleep by it. You know, he wasn't actually using or anything. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in Tolkien's writing that's reflective or, you know, paradoxical in that sense to our own lives. But yeah, I couldn't even begin to think what goes through someone's mindset, you know, trying to exchange or compromising your own principles and your own people just for the sake of money. It's just a terrible thing.
I'll very quickly say that the reason why it's money is because we're not in our own story, where it would be immoral to undermine our own people for any amount of money. It's because we are in the anti-white narrative as deracinated, rabidly individualistic creatures that people are able to be bought off. If we were in our own story, where it would be considered the most immoral thing for a human to do, and all of their neighbors, all of our kin around that person would be able to see that's what they did, there wouldn't be enough money in the world to buy us off and to undermine us for an idea, an ideology that is white erasing us.
Thank you. And we have one last super chat. $10 from the Flying Dutchman. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, Nick's own network setup has been in the works. That costs serious money. Well, thank you for the super chat. And I really, as I said, I wish him all the best. I hope he sets up a community network all over the US, which is ethno-nationalist in outlook, and definitely talks about a certain group of people who are disproportionately overrepresented in the media. I hope he does that. And I wish him all the best doing that, as I wish all the best to other groups doing that also. So thank you for the super chat. Now, we are at the end of the show. Do you want to do a quick song, Richard? Would you like to play us out?
I don't know. Let's say, what do you say? Get one in the chat if you want me to play a song, and I will. If not, some people might not want to hear a song. They might just want to maybe get some more.
No, do you want to play a song? It's not down to the chat. It's down to you. If you're comfortable.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Well, before you do your song, then we will do the outros early tonight. Jason, my friend, thank you for being with us. Tell us who's on tap and how we can support your work, my friend.
It'll probably be Clarion, and everybody loves Clarion. We'll be happy to see her back. And of course, I'll be back on Sunday. It's been magnificent being here with Richard the Lionheart and you, our great leader, Mark Collett on PWR, and with all of the wonderful heroes who show up every single day in service to white well-being. I love all of you, and thank you for being here. And now I am as excited as everyone else to hear Richard's music.
Well, Richard, if you want to give yourself a little bit of an outro before you start to play, tell us where we can find you, how we can support your work, and then feel free to give us a song, and then I will close the show, my friend.
Well, I just want to say it's been an absolute privilege to come onto the show with you guys this evening and talk to you firsthand, and say thank you to Mark, because a lot of the reason why I'm here today in these nationalist circles and stuff is because of you. So I thank you for that. It's certainly made my life for the better. Thank you very much, Jason, and to everyone who wants to come and get involved in my channel. please do follow I think the admins have put some in the link in the chat there to my channel on YouTube. I've also started a BitChute and DLive account now because of the goings on that's happened recently. I'm sure they're going to kick me off of YouTube before I know it. And yeah, you can follow me on there. I'm also starting a new business venture of my own, where I'm going around to historical sites throughout Britain and taking little pieces from those historical sites, from bits of wood and old tools and things like that, because I'm actually a welder, fabricator, that's what I do for a living. And I'm going to be making little trinkets, little knives and, you know, just little parts of our history that I'll be putting up onto a website for you to look at. And also making some of my own survival equipment for if you're interested in getting camping. So that's something to look out for. It's going to be called The Crafty Saxon, and I've just bought the domain for the website. It's called craftysaxon.com. It's not up yet, but it's in the works, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And I don't really know what song to play you. I'll play something happy. I'll play something happy out. How about that? That sounds good. Skyway, ride it on out like if you were a bird. Fly it on up like an eagle in a sunbeam. Fly it on out like if you were a bird. Wear a tall hat like a druid in the old days. Wear a tall hat and a tattooed gown. Ride the white swan like the people of the Beltane. Way along, baby, can't go wrong. Catch a bright star and you place it on your forehead. Say a few prayers and baby, there you go. Take a black cat and you place it on your shoulder. And in the morning you're the all you know. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, my friend. What a great way to end the show. What a talented guy, a wonderful voice, and a guy that really does an awful lot for our people. I think tonight's been a really, really special show. I've really, really enjoyed it. We've had great viewing figures, nearly 2,100 here on DLive, and I've just had the news from Sven. We've had just over 1,700 over on Radio Albion. So pushing 3,800 people watching tonight. So really, really good numbers for a live show. I'm really happy about that. We've gone into the new year with a bang, and what a lovely way to end the show. Thank you so much. Well, thank you to Richard. Thank you to Jason. Please do support their work. Thank you to everyone who's been here. Remember, I will be back on Friday for my weekly video, which will be on BitChute. I'll be on YouTube on Sunday. It won't be gaming this week. It will be the first of the PA Film Club. We'll be reviewing The Godfather, myself, Laura, Nativist and Horus. That's going to be a really, really good show. If you do want to donate, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, or you can send Bitcoin. Crypto is very, very much appreciated. And thank you. Thank you to everyone who donated. Thank you to the wonderful guests. Thank you to Sven for running Radio Albion. And thank you most of all to this community. Absolutely incredible numbers tonight. I can't believe the show has already bounced back from the Christmas lull with such incredible numbers. It's really, really heartening. And stay in touch with Patriotic Alternative for some of the things that we are doing this year. Remember, if you want to push back against this lockdown, we do have two leaflets and a banner. You can get involved in activism, and we will be rolling out more of the initiatives and working even harder with the current initiatives, especially the Helping the Homeless one. That is so important at this time, because the homeless are already very hard hit. But in this time, these people are not getting any money. People aren't putting any money in their hats. There's no people on the street that they can get funds from, and people aren't contributing to them. These people are suffering They are suffering in a harsh winter. It has been snowing. It's very cold. They haven't got much money. We will be going out and doing more homeless outreach campaigns as PA. But you can do that as well. You don't need to do that under our banner. You don't need our permission. All you need to do is make 12 packed lunches of sandwiches and take them out to your city centre, your town centre, and give them to people in need. It's a small gesture, but it can make a huge difference. That's something to leave you with for tonight. But again, thank you, Jason. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to this amazing community who have been here tonight in massive numbers. Love you all. Stay safe and see you on Friday and then again on Sunday.